This episode of Raise the Bar is dedicated to your sanctuary. Domestic abuse is everybody's business. In any given year, 20% of employed women experience domestic abuse, and it costs approximately £2 billion to UK businesses through lost productivity, lost wages, and sick pay. Each week, at least two women are murdered by their partner or ex-partner. You could make an enormous difference to victims of domestic abuse by implementing some very simple changes to the workplace. For example, make sure you have a domestic abuse policy, ensure your managers are trained, and build a relationship with a specialist DA charity. For more information and support with this issue, take a look at the Your Sanctuary website on www.yoursanctuary.org.uk. Thank you. Hello and welcome to Raise the Bar. I'm Frankie Cotton and this is the podcast that explores how to make our economy, businesses and work culture more equitable and impactful. This week, meet Abby Morris, the founder helping consumers make ethical and sustainable choices by verifying claims made by brands and retailers. Abby founded Compare Ethics in 2018 and has since raised a pre-seed round of $441,000 through venture capital funds led by Ascension Ventures. Abby is a Woman in Innovation grant winner and was recently featured on BBC's Dragon's Den, where she won over both Peter Jones and Deborah Meaden. Before launching Compare Ethics, Abby worked as a sustainability consultant for over 10 years, helping corporates and governments, including the United Nations and World Economic Forum, to build responsible policies and communicate these globally. But as a consumer, Abby struggled to see how to purchase products that aligned with her values. She was untrusting of the claims made by brands about their ethics and approaches to sustainability. Finding that no objective, sustainable verification platform existed to help shoppers and brands at scale, Compare Ethics was born. This conversation was recorded on the 16th of May, 2021. I hope you enjoy listening. Tell us what you think of the podcast by sending an email to podcast@raisethebar or tagging us at RaiseHQ on social media. And lastly, if you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us to be more visible, which means we can bring you more interviews like this one. Thank you. Abby, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Abby, I've got to start by saying, first of all, of course, congratulations on your successful investment pitch on Dragon's Den, which was broadcast just last week. I mean, how does it feel since it's come out? Has it been a real whirlwind?
That is definitely the word I've been using to describe it. I woke up to 200 LinkedIn requests on Friday morning.
Oh my God.
That's just a snippet of what's been going on. So it's been a real whirlwind, but really enjoying it. It was an amazing experience.
Yeah. How long ago was it filmed?
So it was actually filmed in September, just before the last lockdown. I feel like we now measure everything when the lockdown was, but
yeah. Too long ago. Oh my goodness. Okay. So that's longer ago than I thought. So does that must also mean then that you've had your little one during that time?
We have. He arrived in November, not too long after that experience. And so he's now nearly 6 months old, which is crazy.
Oh my goodness. So double congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm interested to know, Abby, and now I know that it was 6 months ago, you know, maybe you can confirm the timeline for me, but what was it about Dragon's Den that made you want to go on it and made you think that it was the right choice for you and for Compare Ethics?
Great question. So for us, we really felt that whilst we are a B2B business, we really understand that actually where it all started was myself being frustrated as a consumer wanting to find sustainable products. So we know that Dragon's Den can reach a large audience that probably have similar frustrations when wanting to shop more sustainably. So it seemed like a really great fit. And accompanying to that, the dragons themselves having such a great reach in that space, it seemed like a really good opportunity.
Okay, great. Because you've also, you raised a pre-seed round, as far as I understand, with Ascension Ventures. And I wonder kind of, you know, in terms of the timeline, what came first and how did that work?
So Ascension Ventures and the pre-seed round came first. And then we were approached shortly after we closed that round by the producers of the BBC to come on board. And so the timeline was actually not too long after that.
So they found you. You didn't find them. That's amazing. That seems like a really bizarre situation for BBC producers to come sort of knocking at your door.
Oh, that was very bizarre. In fact, for a long time, I actually had to keep triple checking that it was actually the BBC.
And not some hoax or something.
Exactly.
And how was it raising the pre-seed? Because I imagine that was very, very different to your experience in the Den.
For sure. I really enjoyed it, actually. In hindsight, at the time, it was probably quite an intense experience. We actually closed agreed terms with Essential Ventures 2 weeks before the first UK lockdown. And then we closed our first tranche of funds 2 weeks into the first lockdown. So it was a quite bizarre experience, to say the least. But we have a really amazing investor team on board now. And so that's been super valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. So for you, it's always about the money, but it's also about the team and the resources that come with that.
Exactly. And I think it's around, they've seen, how to scale businesses time and again. And I think that's really, really important to us. People who've tried and tested and been there and done it is always very valuable to get their insights.
Yeah, of course. So, Abby, I wonder if you could tell us how the idea for Compare Ethics came about. And I'm sure it wasn't sort of just a penny drop moment, or perhaps it was, but I'm sure there are lots of things that sort of contributed to that over a number of years.
It's a very good point. It's actually a combination of the two. So I was working as a sustainability policy consultant. So for many years, I would develop policies and then communicate them with clients at the United Nations or the World Economic Forum. And this could be anything from working with NGOs to get them consultative status at the United Nations, right across to leading a presidential campaign. And I loved my job. It was really fun. I enjoyed it. I loved everybody that I worked with. But as a consumer, I had no idea how I was going to match that value set or with my spending. And this was prior to David Attenborough's Blue Planet Effect, prior to any real, I suppose, industry change. And I was left really disappointed. There was nowhere for me to go. I didn't trust a lot of the information that was out there. So originally, I just started a very scrappy blog and started putting brands in there that I trusted because they were sharing more information. And it slowly organically evolved from there. We gathered a following. I then pitched my partner, James, to come on board as our chief product officer, and together we then built the algorithm that verifies best practice.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, that's quite a risk with your partner to kind of pitch and say, come on board. I mean, you must have had some of those conversations, and I know this is quite a personal question, so if you don't want to answer it, that's fine. But what were some of those conversations in your household? Sort of like, okay, well, now we're both going to jump into this thing. What was that like?
Yeah, so everyone's always really surprised by this as well, because it's not on the face of it, it's not an easy thing to do. But James and I are really very opposite. He's data, he's in the detail, I'm blue sky, I like to sell things. We never have any overlap. So we're not founders that, will ever clash in that sense. I don't want to do the job that he does and he doesn't want to do mine, but we will chip in obviously where we need to. And what was happening at the time is he was working on his own side hustle and I was working on mine. And in the end, we were just helping each other. And I obviously, as a salesperson, basically pitched him and said, why don't we just, we're working well together anyway, let's just join forces. Oh, and we should definitely do my idea, by the way. So it did work out in the end. And obviously he was very happy to come on board on that basis.
Yeah, amazing. Now, it's when you think about sort of a concept like Compare Ethics, I mean, it sounds amazing and it's brilliant, but it's also, I imagine, can feel quite overwhelming at times. And I mean, essentially forgive me if I'm wrong about this, but you're sort of really building a huge database of information. And I wonder, where do you start with that? And how much is sort of proactive research about brands and products versus the reactive side? When people come to you and say, can you help us here?
Yeah. So it's a great point. In fact, I actually felt more overwhelmed not doing anything about it, which is potentially a whole nother podcast, where, before when I was working in my job, I really felt like I wasn't doing enough to move the needle, and I found actually more stressful. Whereas Compare Ethics gives me, you know, personally, a really strong outlet to really tangibly see an impact. And actually, I think when we work things out, we found that actually you can create good systems for like managing data, whether it's inbound requests. We have like a validation interview style, just to see whether or not they're a good fit, so we don't waste anyone's time. We've done a lot of testing, and that helps us manage inbound versus reactive outbound type requests. And the information that we then collect as part of the verification process is all automated now. So they can very much self-service, self-select the attributes that relate to their business and the data that they have. So it's much easier nowadays rather than that scrappy blog that I was doing at the beginning.
Yeah, of course. And do you see more demand on the brand side or the consumer side? Do you have more consumers coming to you and asking for information about brands, or are you being approached by brands who, you know, really want to access the consultative side and the verification side of things?
Yeah, good question. I would say it's more of a brand piece in the last 12 months. I think it's also where we've been spending our time, because when we first created Compare Ethics, obviously it was mainly for audiences like myself wanting to get more information. But actually, over time, we've realized businesses need help. They're on a journey, and actually they don't know where they're going a lot of the time. And I think that's the great thing about the verification process, is that actually we can tell businesses, this is where you're doing really well. Here is some recommendations of how you can improve. And I think that's going to be a constant feature. And I think that's why businesses are increasingly getting in touch, definitely.
Yeah. And that's something I was going to ask you, actually, is sort of how have brands responded to you? Because I imagine the kinds of brands who, you know, are already quite engaged on the sustainability side and are proactive will come to you and want your support. But arguably, the brands that need it the most are probably hiding or shying away from some of this stuff. And I imagine it's not all good information that you're surfacing. You're surfacing points for change. And I wonder, yeah, how you manage that and how you deal with conflict of interest when you're working with brands who ultimately, I guess, are also paying you.
Yeah, well, they pay us to tell them where they need to improve. So it's actually a nice, frank conversation. And we're quite, because we are so strict, for example, a lot of brands will want to communicate living wages. And honestly, in the current market, even with the most sustainable brands, you know, that type of data set is very hard to verify and very hard to prove. And we have a very hard bar. And we do have to have sometimes quite difficult conversations, because sustainable brands are there saying, well, we're very sustainable. Why would you want all of this information? I've never been asked for this information before. And so it's starting to get people into the mindset of, you need to have this data in place to validate the claims that you are making. And I think that in turn helps us, you know, overcome that, that any conflict, because actually that's what they're hiring us for. Just like you'd hire an auditor to tell you where you've done well, not well, you know, we are very kind of similar in that sense. I think the other thing is around our corporate governance structure. So we're actually just about to launch a whole new way of working that separates the core business to literally industry telling us what best practice looks like. And that's going to feed into our algorithms and all of the work that we do. So I think we're always looking for ways to do that. And on the point around the least sustainable brands maybe wanting to shy away, it's quite interesting. In the last, I'd say, 3 to 6 months, we've had some of what I would probably consider, you know, definitely not the most sustainable brands at all get in touch. And I think that's because they're deeply understanding that they too have to start getting on this data journey, this journey of understanding where they're at and where they're going. So regardless of brand shape and size, that's definitely going to happen.
How difficult is it to verify the claims that brands are making, particularly, you know, where there are global supply chains? I mean, you know, we can talk about fashion being arguably one of the most challenging. How do you even go about trying to verify those claims and that information? That must be a difficult process in itself.
Yeah, for sure. And some brands are much better at it than others. So some brands are the dream. They have a whole cloud folder that they add into the process. Honestly, it's amazing. And because they said, oh, we were waiting as a sustainable brand, we've been waiting to share this information. Not many people actually ask us for it. And then you have other people that honestly have never tried to gather that data from the supply chain. So we work more closely with them to provide, I suppose, support of what they need to be asking from their suppliers and making sure that they can gather the data appropriately. So it is a mixed bag, and we just extra support where needed. And the time for data collection can be anything from a day to a couple of weeks, depending on the brand.
Okay. So there's is that real trust element there in terms of the supply chain as well then. So actually trusting and believing and hoping that the information that they're sharing is accurate, right?
Yeah, so we always look for third-party supply chain certifications. So, for example, does that manufacturer have a GOTS organic certification? We also have an inclusion and exclusion criteria for certain standards and certifications. For example, any certifications that are not fully verified, i.e. actually audited on a regular basis, then we will not take on that as evidence that is verified. So we have a whole methodology that applies that across different verticals and levels of the supply chain.
Yeah, and I guess it's like anything, right? You know, we can't expect to overnight just be perfect at this. It's iterative, and it's just sort of steps forward in the right direction. And, you know, over the years to come, I guess those things will get clearer, get easier. Supply chain partners will be used to answering these questions, and there would just be more transparency in general.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're not the only people asking suppliers for this information nowadays. So I think suppliers will very quickly get used to this conversation if they're not already. I mean, the top ones are very good. Some of the really great manufacturers have their in-date certifications listed live on their website. You know, there is other ways that you can surface this information for the ones and the players that are doing good.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's the sort of nuance and the difference between verifying a brand versus verifying a product? What are the sort of slight differences there in terms of the information that you collect?
Yeah, great question. So it really just depends on the attribute that brand would like to verify. So for example, they might be a B Corp, which is a brand level assessment, mm-hmm. or they might have a GOTS organic cotton collection. And at that point, we would then look for all the GOTS level verification. So that's really just how it works. It's very much on an attribute by attribute basis of working backwards from the data that they have.
And in terms of your business model, so I mean, you have on your website, you sort of have a semi marketplace, but also you have this sort of verification mark. I mean, is your intention ultimately to build out a marketplace? Are you going to focus just on consumer products, or, you know, are you really just going to hone in on this real sort of mark and the meaning behind that?
Yeah. So I definitely think that there is a value in having an online space for people to check information about brands and products. And I definitely foresee that side of the website staying, which is why it's still there. But we're not ever going to be an e-commerce marketplace platform. It's more for information for end users and consumers to gather insights about what's been verified about multiple brands. And we definitely will be focusing more on the verification and actually supporting brands to get the conversation right and how they can improve.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I wonder, Abby, does it ever concern you that consumers are hypocrites? And sometimes we say things like, you know, sustainability is really important to us, but then ultimately we make choices based on price and based on convenience. Does that worry you at all?
Not really. It cannot be the consumer's responsibility to drive system change. There's not going to be any one actor within this system that's going to do it. I also think I'm quite, as much as I'm an optimist, I'm also quite fickle, just because I know how hard it is to change my own habits day to day, that it's, you know, that we're never going to get there by consumers bearing the brunt of the responsibility. And I think that's where a really clear opportunity for regulation, which is now changing the way that we will shop responsibly towards the end of this year, It's the role of employees in organisations championing better practices for their employers. Us, you know, mothers, children, you know, it's the conversations and the influences that we have within our own lives collectively, coupled with, you know, regulation and investors, that ultimately we will get to a system change point.
Yeah, I totally agree. And on that side about regulation, what are some of the regulations, particularly around greenwashing? And you mentioned there that there's change coming this year. What does that look like?
So earlier this year, there was a large international sweep of online businesses, and they found that 40% of businesses were found to be misleading consumers on environmental claims and potentially breaking consumer protection law. So there are numerous markets, such as the UK, the European Commission, France, and a few others, who are increasingly updating their consumer code of practice to ensure that brands and businesses are not misleading customers. So the timeline varies depending on the market. So the Competition and Market Authority in the UK is bringing out new regulation guidance later this year, and it will probably be enforced towards the end of the year. France have already set out that there will be fines for misleading advertising of up to 80% of the promotional campaign. And the EU will follow a similar suit with announcements very soon on that as well. So businesses across the EU will face a compliance burden for getting this conversation wrong. And I think the reason why obviously we exist is we want to support them to get this conversation right. And ultimately, you can actually get a better business return for doing this properly. And that's, I think, really important.
Yeah, of course. Abby, how was it to win the Women in Innovation Awards recently?
I was very surprised. Because I knew how competitive it was. And so it was one of those moments where I'd obviously also just had my baby, Rumi, and it was a very...
Oh, quite an emotional time.
Yeah, I was just the whole time. I was like, oh, this is just such an amazing win. And, you know, when I listen to the other women that are in the cohort as well, I'm always just really taken aback. Like, everyone's amazing. And it's been a real game changer for us, definitely.
Yeah, well, congratulations. I mean, so many things to congratulate you on over the past year. You've definitely been busy on all counts. Now, Abby, I wonder, now that you have obviously your investment, what do the next steps look like for Comparethics? What does the future hold? And actually, that's probably a silly question for me to ask, because you've just told me that your investment actually came in almost a year ago, right? So are you raising again?
Good question. So we're definitely wanting to hit where we're going and move quickly. So I think for us, it's a really good time and opportunity for us to start thinking about it. I think ultimately the main thing for us is just keep going, keep doing what we're doing, because we're really onto something, and it feels like everything's gathering momentum at the moment. So we're just with our head down, making sure that we verify and support as many businesses as possible over the next 12 to 18 months. You know, we have a very clear mission. We want to verify every business to make sure that businesses are actually attaining climate goals and human values. So we've got a lot of work to do on that.
Yeah, of course. Got it. Thank you so much, Abby, for chatting with me and telling me all about Comparethics. Is there anything that you'd like to leave us on? I'd like to just give you that opportunity.
Yeah, thank you so much. If anyone's listening and would like more information about us, if you just drop Comparethics into your relevant search engine and you will find us. If you are a brand looking to see how you can get more value on your sustainable initiatives, just drop me a message on LinkedIn and I'll come back to you.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Abby.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to Raise the Bar. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on your favourite podcast app and spread the word. You can join in the conversation online using the hashtag Raise the Bar and tagging us at @RaiseHQ_ on social media. And you can find all the details about our brilliant guests in the show notes. See you next week.